I recall the first time I came to the Minnesota Zen Meditation Center. I came to morning Zazen on a Thursday morning, about 5:45 a.m., about 20 years ago. And I really wanted to try meditating with other people. I had a little bit of interest in Zen, and my schedule was such that the only time that worked for me was 5:45 a.m., which was a time that I was absolutely not interested in being awake. But apparently my aspiration was sufficient to get me out of bed. And, you know, I thought it was good. And I kept coming, and, you know, basically I just noticed that the things that I was hoping for were happening, which was I was experiencing less emotional turmoil and suffering. And I remember, you know, I really was intensely unattracted to the ritual because during morning Zazen, Monday through Saturday, after Zazen, we have service. So there's chanting and bowing. And I was, you know, really didn't have a calling for that and would walk out. But then sometimes I started to stay. I sort of said, well, if the meditation part is beneficial, maybe I should just try the other stuff and see. I don't know. I don't really understand why the meditation is beneficial. So why don't I try something else and see if that happens to be beneficial too? And it was weird. You know, I have an anti-religious upbringing. I came to Zen quite anti-religious. So anyway, we would chant the Heart Sutra. And, you know, that text is very strange and almost incomprehensible to a newcomer. And, but, you know, I just remember in the middle it says, with no attainment and nothing to attain. And I really got that, and it really, really mattered to me. I was struggling to accomplish things in my career and struggling to suffer less and struggling to do fewer harmful things, and felt like there was things wrong with me and things wrong with the people in my life. And it was amazing to just be like, right now, I'm being invited to not try and get rid of or get anything. And it really touched my heart. And in the Heart Sutra, there's a long passage, which I had no idea, you know, what the complexity is. A very complex philosophical arguments related to it. But all I knew is I was sitting there chanting, there's no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no sight, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, no object of mind, no realm of mind consciousness. It's very mysterious. But I would sit there in the dim light before dawn. If the dawn turned up the light too much, Tim would always turn it back down. Dim. Dimness. And it was a sense, mysterious to me, a sense of shedding, putting down, not knowing. So we used to chant a few more texts during our morning services intermittently. And so I'd been chanting this, no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, and not really knowing what it meant, but felt like there was just kind of a settling in my awareness that arose or settled. And then one day, the dawn says, harmony of difference and sameness. And I flip through the book to find the right chant. And we're chanting along. And in the middle of the harmony of difference and sameness, it says, eye and sights, ear and sounds, nose and smells, tongue and taste. Thus, with each and everything, depending on these roots, the leaves spread forth. And I was like, wow, yeah, that's true. That's true. I realized that even though I was sitting there chanting no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, what was occurring was I was becoming more sensitive to the freshness of what was seen and heard and smelled and felt. And then this new piece of liturgical text, the harmony of difference and sameness, was affirming it. And the way I remember it is I just had this rush also of this felt sense of the joy of non-duality as expressed in Zen literature, which is you say one thing and then you just say the other one. You know, everything's empty and it's right here. We are profoundly broken together and everything is already complete, whole, and realized. I felt it. Just by being together in the room with the people making the sounds. This mode of realizing that any way we want to talk about things or any way I want to have a viewing things is just a way, and I can always shift and something else can happen. I am confident that the views that I hold will appear wrong to many people and even to me later in my life. Many of the ones that I think are very clearly right will turn out to be wrong. And that's okay. That's Zen offers me that. So the harmony of difference and sameness. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the harmony of difference and sameness today. This is an 8th century Chinese Chan poem written by Shuto Shichen, who is also known as the author of the Song of the Grass of Hermitage. But the harmony of difference and sameness, or the Sandokai in Japanese pronunciation, the Kantonki or something like that in Chinese, is one of the root liturgical texts of Soto Zen. So in many Soto Zen temples, it would be chanted every day. And just for a fun note for anyone who was here at Tim's Dharma talk yesterday, where he's talking about Zen as a syncretism or a coming together of Buddhism and Taoism, and with a little Confucianism thrown in there for flavor. There actually is another text with the same name, Kantonki, or pronounced in Japanese would be Sandokai, which is a Taoist text from 600 years before the Buddhist text called the Sandokai. That was actually a pretty influential text. It's known as the first text on Taoist alchemy that there is. And the weirdest thing about the phrase Sandokai, if I'm using the Japanese pronunciation, is it could be translated like a million ways. The language just of the title alone is almost unparsable. And so in Taoist translations, they'll call this Kantoki, Sandokai, kinship of the three, or the unity of the three. And almost universally, Zen people translate it harmony of difference and sameness, which is like there's three things? I don't know. It's a little mysterious. This is characteristic of Chinese Taoist and Zen and Buddhist literature. Just like that turning one thing and then the opposite to have a phrase that can contain multitudes. So the harmony of difference and sameness says at one point, grasping at things is surely delusion. According with sameness is still not enlightenment. And this is, if you wanted just like a simple gloss, this is almost identical to the meaning of form is emptiness and emptiness is form from the Heart Sutra. Emptiness is a reason for seeing how everything is ungraspable. You can't hold on to anything or control anything, which you probably don't like and maybe you think is wrong. That's cool. But it is a root teaching of Buddhism. And we have all kinds of ways to kind of find a feeling towards it. But even though that is true, just being like, oh, everything's ungraspable, it's all one, I'll just do nothing. Not possible. That was doing something. So we're always acting within an ungraspable universe, and the way we act matters. this is the central theme of both texts. Anyway, I think it would be nice to chant this together. So chanting, when we chant with Zoom, we invite everyone to just be muted. Otherwise, the audio gets very strange. The chanting is, if you haven't done Zen chanting before, it's usually a single pitch. And people with male bodies will generally match my pitch. So if I'm the leader, so if I go like, the Dharma of thusness is intimately transmitted from west to east, then you'd be down there like that. And if you have a female body, you're likely to want to chant about another octave higher. The Dharma of thusness is intimately transmitted from west to east. So, but whatever note you chant, it will be beautiful because it's happening. Wow. Okay. So I'm going to open this up. And the other thing I'll say is you can just let the words wash over you. You don't have to figure something out. And I encourage you to not get stuck on any point, but just keep flowing through with the sound and the words. All right. So looks like you can all see that. I will chant the title alone, and invite you to chant with me. Harmony of difference and sameness. The mind of the great sage of India is intimately transmitted from west to east. While human faculties are sharp or dull, the way has no northern or southern ancestors. The spiritual source shines clear in the light. The branching streams flow on in the dark. Grasping at things is surely delusion. According with sameness is still not enlightenment. All the objects of the senses interact and yet do not. Interacting brings involvement, otherwise each keeps its place. Sights vary in quality and form. Sounds differ as pleasing or harsh. Refined in common speech come together in the dark. Clear and murky phrases are distinguished in the light. The four elements return to their natures just as a child turns to its mother. Fire heats, wind moves, water wets, earth is solid. Eye and sights, ear and sounds, nose and smells, tongue and tastes. Thus with each and everything, depending on these roots, the leaves spread forth. Trunk and branches share the essence. Revered and common, each has its speech. In the light there is darkness, but don't take it as darkness. In the dark there is light, but don't see it as light. Light and dark oppose one another like the front and back foot in walking. Each of the myriad things has its merit, expressed according to function and place. Phenomena exist, box and lid fit, principle responds, arrow points meet. Hearing the words, understand the meaning. Don't set up standards of your own. If you don't know the way right before you, how will you know the path as you walk? Progress is not a matter of far or near, but if you are confused, mountains and rivers block your way. I respectfully urge you who study the mystery, do not pass your days and nights in vain. I'm going to paste the text of that, just the English, into the chat.
Oh, no.
Hold up. I just invite you while I'm doing this to just pause and like close your eyes, maybe even, but just turn internally and see if you can remember anything that you just said or heard. Maybe a vague memory, but that had some resonance, like a line that was like, what? Wow. That had some power or interest for you. And you may not know what it is. Oh, darn. All right. Well, my friends, somehow I'm not able to copy and paste right now. So I'm not going to put it in the chat. I think if you're interested, you can find this in the MZMC chant book. Or just look it up online, Harmony of Difference and Sameness. So I'm going to respond to the conditions of whatever is going on with my technological mishaps by moving forward. So... Thank you. I'll just try this one more time because I got a tip, hot tip. Didn't work. Thanks, Jason. Okay, so harmony of difference and sameness. So this is about how, in a way, we can see that each thing is one with everything else. So we might encounter the language of oneness. This is a little imprecise, but in particular, this text, one of the main imports is that it is not, it's really dangerous and unhelpful to be stuck on an idea of oneness, which is the same kind of, oneness and emptiness have a relationship, which I won't dig into, but likewise in the Heart Sutra, the point isn't just that everything is empty, it's that it is form and it is empty. So here, you know, I'm just remembering a instance where I had a person I was working with in a spiritual program of addiction recovery. And we worked together quite closely. He was an Anishinaabe man, and his spirituality was really based in both Christianity and the Anishinaabe traditional vision of the world. And I was like really anti-religious and struggling with this spiritual program I was in, where there's really an idea that you needed to have a sense of a higher power that would liberate you. And, you know, I was going to Zen and I was just trying to figure out what this could mean for me, because I wanted to be more free. And I saw these people who are like healing, and I'm like, I want some of that. But for me, it was hard to get my mind around it and my heart around what that could mean for me personally. And I struggled, and he and I would talk, and I wish I could remember his name. It was a long time ago, about 20 years ago. But every once in a while, he would say to me, you know, he'd get kind of exasperated with my worrying or my processing. And he would say, there ain't but one God, dude. And, you know, on the one hand, I really appreciate it. He was trying to just say, this doesn't have to be so complicated for you. There is something vast and loving that's there. And all people just have different ways of thinking about it and talking about it. But it's here, you know, and you don't have to turn it into all this and that and figuring out. So I really appreciated, you know, his intent. But I also was really wounded, and it was really hard for me, because it felt like he was denying what mattered to me and the truth, which was for me that I never have experienced a belief in any God. So like the idea that there ain't but one is not that comforting. It's more like, hey, I'm ignoring your actual views. So it's just really important to remember that a language that's about oneness and unity can be really, can help us, but it can also be really alienating to people and a denial of what matters to them. So I also recall that this guy, we did a lot of things together, and he was like, you know, I think you should do a sweat lodge, and I'm inviting you to a sweat lodge. And I was like, okay, I will do that. You know, I was just like, I'll try anything. I'm sick of being completely not well. And so, you know, I went to this sweat lodge, and I will keep the story short, but, you know, we got in there, and I didn't know what was happening that well. It's a little bit like coming to the Zen Center or going to a Catholic church for me, which is also very weird and mysterious. And we got in there, and, you know, it's a very intense sensory environment, and a lot of praying, chanting. Well, I guess it's singing. They call it praying, but it's like singing, high-pitched singing. But then occasionally just verbalized prayers. And, you know, the environment is really oppressively hot, like it's almost unbearable, or was almost unbearable for me. But it was powerful. And I found a really deep sense of like the power of that ritual. And in that container, swept in both a sense of profound connection to the people there in my own interiority. And I could feel that the songs that were being sung were the songs of plains and woodland Indian people from this continent that had been passed down for hundreds of years and were barely being kept alive in here. And that I, as a white person who'd had, you know, a nice big house and access to really good schools and a very safe environment, was sitting in this space with people who had been raised with poverty and profound unaddressed trauma and the violence of the United States against the indigenous people. I could feel it in that space with the people, like time collapsed. And it was very healing in a personal way. And we held each other together. And, you know, that experience changed me. And as some of you know, I have engaged in various ways. You know, recently I've been trying to support Indigenous people who are trying to stop the pipeline in Minnesota. You know, just finding my ways to align myself to repairing the harm that was so viscerally evident to me in that spiritual container. So there's a line in the Harmony of Difference and Sameness, which is translated in the translation we have, says progress is not a matter of far or near. Progress is not a matter of far or near. Now, many, many lines in this poem could be translated a whole bunch of different ways. Oftentimes they'll have a single character that evokes sometimes opposing meanings or refer to all kinds of different things. Like it's astonishing. But this particular line has five Chinese characters. And another reasonable translation of this, a more literal translation, would be a forward step is not approaching or leaving. A forward step is not approaching or leaving. The approaching and leaving are also identical to terms that refer to intimacy and transcendence. That is to say, entering realization through a complete immersion in the senses or experience, or entering realization through going beyond everything. Forward step is not a matter of approaching or leaving. So we see this language a lot in the Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi. It says turning away and touching are both wrong. Or Chertow in his other great poem says the vast inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. But here in the Harmony of Difference and Sameness, what is explicit is the activity, the forward step. In Zen literature, we have the language of forward step and backward step. Forward step is activity in the world. The backward step tends to reflect retreat, meditation practice. Ultimately, these are always collapsed, but in a certain sense, and practically speaking, everyone here knows that it feels a little different to be sitting in Zazen than to be going to work. So forward step is that activity, that going forward. And here they're saying, it's not a matter of approaching or leaving. Activity is inseparable from the infinite. Activity is inseparable from the infinite. What we do is always connected to the entirety of history and the entirety of the future. The quality with which we act is our contribution to the world. We see this kind of, and so this says like what you do matters, but franticness, if you want the world to be a frantic place, frantic activity to fix it will get you frantic people fixing stuff. Is that the world you really want to see? Trying to dominate and control? Is that the world you want to see, a world of domination and control? thinking of someone as ultimately and irrevocably separate and other and wrong? Is that the world you want to see? A world where that's the view we have? Our activity can begin to be one where it's about energy, compassion, seeing difference and connection, doing something as an offering. This is possible. We see the language of infinity collapsed in the moment's activity in many places. Dogen Zenji. When one person at one time sits in Zazen, they become imperceptibly one with each and all of the myriad things and permeate completely all time, so that throughout the past, the future, and present, throughout the limitless universe, they are performing the endless and ceaseless work of guiding beings to enlightenment. Only this is not limited to the practice of sitting alone. The sound that issues from the striking of emptiness is an endless and wondrous voice that resounds before and after the fall of the hammer. Alice Walker, who you might know as the author of The Color Purple. Alice Walker, also a Buddhist, in case you didn't know. She wrote, "Look closely at the present you are constructing. It should look like the future you are dreaming." Yeah. William Faulkner, "The past isn't dead. It isn't even past." Audre Lorde, "The quality of light by which we scrutinize our lives has a direct bearing on the product which we live and upon the changes which we hope to bring about through those lives." So we can turn some interest to, like, what is the quality of heart and mind I'm bringing to this moment? And then if it's like, wow, the quality of mind is othering and annoyance, you'd be like, oh, well, that looks like it needs some compassion. Yeah, a lot of times when we turn and we see there's a lot of stuff in there that's not actually the world we're hoping to see. That's okay. Then we can meet that with compassion. So I'm going to read you one more little story and wrap up. So this, I really like this story. I have to admit, probably part of it is because it starts this way. So this is a story about Dongshan and Kaoshan. So Soto Zen, it's very complex linguistically, but the Chinese for Soto Zen is Kaodong, and those characters pronounce Soto in Japanese, and Kaodong is Kao from Kaoshan, and Dong is Dongshan for Dongshan. So Soto Zen is named after these two people that are having this conversation. Upon meeting Kaoshan, Dongshan said, "What is your name?" Kaoshan said, "Benji." Okay, so I just had to tell you that. That's why I really like this guy. So, but they had a deep and long relationship, as this tradition of intimate transmission between teacher and student celebrates over and over again. People immersing themselves and just being together in the practice, teacher and student. This is how the way is realized. Intimate transmission. So we see stories of parting, especially in the Soto Zen, and you can, the context you see is sad. The student's going to move on, and it's kind of sad. Later, when Kaoshan left Dongshan, Dongshan said, "Where are you going?" Kaoshan said, "I'm not going to a different place." Dongshan said, you're not going to a different place, but there is still going. Kaohsiung said, I'm going, but not to a different place. The forward step is not a matter of approaching or leaving. It's complete here. It's distinct. It's different. And it's within the entirety of the universe. It is infinity. The harmony of difference and sameness is realized in this moment's activity. My father died about 20 years ago of cancer. And I was very fortunate that he had a long period of between his diagnosis and his death. So we spent a lot of time together and did a lot of healing. And I'm very grateful. And at the very end, I got a call from my mother, said, you need to come out here now. We live in Montana. And because he's in the hospital and he's probably going to be gone in a couple days. So I got on a plane. And I went out there. And my dad was barely responsive. You know, he would, when we'd come in the room, he might be able to reach over and move his hand to indicate that he wanted to hold our hand. And I was experiencing a kind of total presence that I can never remember having experienced before. And I could see that he was going, but not somewhere else. We were just there together. I wasn't waiting for him to get better. There was only love. Thank you all for listening.